It's time for Viewmaster on 95BFM.
And this morning, we've got Alex in the studio. Kia ora, Alex.
Hi, hello, how's it going?
It's very nice to have you up here. We've got Sam off for a couple of weeks, and we're going to listen...
I've got the opening theme for a little show by the name of Succession playing in the background there.
Oh.
We can talk over the top of it because it basically just does this.
So I've heard so much about Succession and seen it.
Oh, great. I'm glad you've heard of it.
So I'm excited.
Because I feel like people sort of haven't heard of it a lot here. I feel like I encounter a lot of quizzical looks when I mention it to people as the best show on television, which it currently is.
This is a hugely bold call.
I truly believe it's the best show on television.
The best show on television right now. I'm ready to make that call.
This is a massive call. I'm ready for the facts to back it up.
So it's kind of... It's HBO's like post Game of Thrones flagship show, and then it's filled the 9 p.m. Sunday night slot.
Got you.
In the US, in a post Game of Thrones world, and it basically follows the kind of ups and downs of this family called the Roy family, who are, for want of a better term, like part of the 1%, quote unquote.
Got you.
The sort of like the common folklore of the show is that it's loosely based on the Murdoch family, which, you know, people who kind of follow the media
so
probably.
So this is the news conglomerate empire.
Exactly.
Rupert Murdoch's people.
All of those words, exactly. Yeah, like media conglomerate empire. They own like everything that you, like, do they own, are you guys owned by Fox?
I don't think we're owned by Fox. Fortunately, I think BFM's still the last bastion against Rupert Murdoch.
you hear that, Rupert? The challenge has been laid.
Yeah.
So people don't really know about it yet. And I think that that's maybe because of availability, though, because it's an HBO show.
Yep.
You know, it is on Neon. It's streaming on that. So, you know, if people have that, they can check it out. Or, you know, do a little whatever you do to get
to
your TV.
To watch what you watch, yep.
So comedy drama. It's created by this guy, Jesse Armstrong, who has a sort of very starred history in Britain. He made a show, a little show called Peep Show that you may...
Oh, just a small show that people might have heard of.
That may or may not be one of, you know, like golden age television seminal texts. So he created that with his writing partner, Sam Bain. And he sort of, he did other like kind of sketch comedy shows like Smack the Pony and stuff. And he's done a lot of sort of more political writing in his later years. He worked on The Thick of It and In the Loop, which was the movie version of that show.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Logan Roy, who was basically the kind of Rupert Murdoch family, the Rupert Murdoch like parallel.
Character.
Yeah, exactly. And then his four children who, in the first episode, in like the pilot episode of the show, Logan has a stroke. And then it basically, that's like the catalytic event for all four of these, of his kids to kind of start jostling for power.
Succession.
Exactly.
I see.
Exactly.
Aha.
Literally that. you know, that feels like a bit tropey. Like, I don't think like any, that's not the first time that this story has been told.
No.
But it's the first time that this story has been told now. And it's the first time it's been told by Armstrong and his collaborators who are, Adam McKay and Will Ferrell is also credited as an exec producer on this show.
This is quite a heavy-hitting lineup of people involved with this.
Yeah, and the cast as well is pretty massive. It's got Brian Cox plays the patriarch.
Got you.
Who he's kind of like a bit of a that guy face, you know, like really like old, grizzled, you know, you kind of like might not know the name and then you see him and you're like, oh yes,
it's that guy.
Exactly. And then Jeremy Strong is Logan Roy. Kieran Culkin plays Roman Roy. We'll kind of come back to him in a second. And then Connor Roy is played by Alan Ruck, and then Shiv Roy is played by Sarah Snook. And those are kind of like the four main players. So suffers a stroke and everything just basically falls to bits, and it's kind of Machiavellian carnage in which like everyone is like as awful as they, you know, might possibly be able to be to each other, sometimes face to face, sometimes like behind each other's backs, but you know, like they're all doing it with these like
nastiest
huge smiles on their face. Yeah.
Ooh,
exactly.
I love a bit of sort of just sounds totally evil character interaction, especially if it's like siblings as well, and you're sort of like, oh, the drama.
Yeah. there's a lot of like what I feel like what I encounter when I talk about this show, and maybe you've experienced this as well, is like a lot of like, oh yeah, I started that, or like I watched the first episode and I found everybody just hugely unlikable.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in this like concept of likability of characters,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I feel like this is like kind of a thing that gets thrown around, especially like, you know, in today's like peak TV era. Like we all know the anti-hero mm-hmm. format, right? Like we all know how that plays. We've all seen Breaking Bad, we've yeah, all like yeah, watched yeah, yeah. Mad Men. We all know what that is. And this, like, those kinds of shows generally provide, like, a kind of, like, a moral complexity to the,
okay,
like, the
so
awful
you're sort of
center.
Like, they're not the worst. I can still, I mean, they're awful, but I still root for them as a human being.
Yeah.
Is that still true of the family in Succession?
Or
are they just
like,
totally awful?
They're kind of totally awful.
Oh,
they're all sort of, like, completely irredeemable. And that's what's really fascinating about this is there's no like, so okay, Breaking Bad, for example, you've got Walter White as the kind of, you know, like complete, like, you know, he starts as a good guy, ends up as a bad guy, as the sort of, God, you know, yeah, like yeah. Kind of cliche goes. And then like all of the characters around him kind of provide like a kind of like moral mm-hmm. landscape with which you navigate that. Whereas this is just like shades of awfulness.
Oh,
like
no.
It's there's like almost nobody redeemable in this television show, except for one character who we'll mention in a second. But I feel like if you were going to make a show about the 1%,
yep.
Why you wouldn't?
Why
want
would you
them
make them redeemable?
Sympathetic?
Exactly.
You wouldn't want them
yeah, yeah.
to be likable. I kind of.
He's good. He is good at writing characters that suck. Because if you think about the Peep Show, no one in the Peep Show is like a good character. Everybody sucks, but they have redeemable qualities to them,
yeah.
maybe.
There's such a sadness
yeah.
to that show that everybody kind of becomes redeemable in that way. Like
yeah.
you kind of can't help but feel sort of sorry for them.
For those characters. This is not the case. I think you're totally right as well. If you're trying to make a story about the people who have the most in the world and are screwing things up for everybody else, why would you want them to be redeemable characters?
This show is not about fantasy. It's not about creating a false world. It's
yeah.
about exploring just like exactly how narcissistic and indulgent and awful and indifferent these people are. It's like this kind of like villainous orgy where everybody is just like kind of like doing, you know, you think people cannot be worse than like the previous episode, and yet
it stacks.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's texted in King Lear. Yeah, that's the OG
yeah,
template for these kind of
totally.
Things.
Totally. And actually in the most recent episode, so it's up to the second season, and in the most recent episode there was like a very Lear-esque kind of plot point where Logan Roy sort of brought his children into a room one by one to kind of like tell him why
they should take over.
Yeah, sort of like Ooh. Veiled in that way, but more like what he should do with the empire. And you know, like obviously that literally is the plot of King Lear. I mean, it's kind of Shakespearean-esque in a kind of lazy way, because like
right.
that doesn't form any sort of like, that's just kind of the background,
right,
you know, like
okay,
it's not like that is then the catalytic event that like, you know, everything else like falls out of. It's just like another thing that happens,
another
you know?
Bit
it's
of
just
the
like
twisted tapestry.
Yeah, totally. And I do think, you know, like if we're sort of like talking about this idea of likability or sort of like identifiability, like I do think what is potentially problematic about this, and it's kind of hard to say because like it is only, you know, like one and a little bit seasons in, you know, there's kind of the Soprano effect where
mm-hmm.
like you have these like ogreous, like horrible characters, but just like by virtue of people writing them for like
yep.
60 hours and then you spending like 60 or 70 hours
you
with
them.
You
become attached to them.
Exactly.
Okay.
You kind of start liking them and you have to find things.
Or like liking to not like them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Liking that you don't like them.
Or it's like understanding them as well, like understanding
right.
their motivations. Like being like, well, I know why Tony did this because he's motivated by like
these
this sort of
here.
Trauma that he suffered from his like
so
mother.
That's so interesting though, because it makes it complicated as a viewer
yeah.
to sort of enjoy a show like this, or to sort of work out what the point maybe of a show like this is. If after a while it's almost like sort of Stockholm syndrome, you're being taken hostage
yeah.
by the show, and then
yeah.
you sort of accidentally fall in love with these awful characters and
that's
you're like, oh, hang on.
Well, I mean, like HBO has kind of long been making shows, I think, that hang out at the intersection of good and evil, and mm-hmm. like they like to kind of like spin the compass around, so you kind of never know which way you're facing. Obviously, yeah. Game of Thrones is like a massive example of that, where yeah. you spend the first couple of seasons thinking that Jaime is this like terrible person, like, and literally is like posited as the villain of the show, even though he looks like the hero.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the show, you're literally rooting for him. That's kind of the climax.
They are pretty
like,
good at that. That's why I guess they get so good at these big heavy hitters, is because they are able to take you on a journey with a character that you didn't think you were going to commit to, or that you didn't really want to commit to. And yeah. then by the end of it, you accidentally signed up.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Involuntarily.
And I think in this show specifically, there's something really interesting in the kind of like schadenfreude involved in like watching these awful people be awful to each yeah. other. You know, yeah. it's kind of like, it's almost like reality TV, you know, like yeah. just like watching the worst people you can imagine, like, be the worst that they can be.
And to each other. It's yeah. like a contained awfulness.
Yeah, exactly. Although I would say that kind of like there's a lot of meaning drenched in the sort of like subtleties in the show, where sometimes there are interactions with quote regular folk unquote, and it's kind of devastating because
oh, wow.
like
okay.
you have to see how there's just like casual contrast thrown at like, you know, yeah, like a small scene that happened in the last episode was a contractor to Logan was told that he was only going to get paid $100,000 for a $350,000 job, and
wow.
he was like Logan Roy was like, well, you can sue me, that's fine, my lawyers, blah 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 blah, and like, you know, just walks away as if it's nothing, and you like sort of like you leave this character in the background, and you slowly realize that person's life is ruined. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like $200,000, which is like nothing. That's like literally changed to these characters.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah. You.
Someone said, what's the show called?
It's called Succession.
Yeah. And you can find it on Neon.
It's by
HBO.
Yeah.
And it sounds mint.
Yeah.
It sounds hectic. It sounds like I'm going to start watching it and probably regret because I'll lose my whole life to watching this show.
Yeah. You could, well, like, I mean, yeah, I've always sort of done it like episode by episode because I was watching it currently, but you could do a binge on the last season
Uh-oh.
Now, which, yeah, would be, I'd be kind of interested in that effect. The one thing I would say is that this show, more than any other show, has like a kind of effect where the first five or so episodes of the first season warm you into it. And I know everybody kind of says that about every show where they're like,
well, you just have
better.
To,
yeah, it gets better. Yeah, so just stick with it.
Yeah.
But this genuinely does.
I think because like it's calibrating itself.
Okay.
It's finding its tone.
Okay.
It's,
I feel like some people like that though. It's like the chase, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's the chase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Stick with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And the reward is so great. So
this sounds like a fantastic show. Definitely one to go and maybe binge watch if you want to really dive into that sort of deep pit.
Horrible about yourself.
Of awfulness.
Yeah.
Succession. It's HBO. You
yep.
can find it on Neon.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Alex. What a pleasure to have you in the studio
Thanks
this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll see you next week as well.
Cool.
Very
cool.
Exciting.
Exciting.
That was Viewmaster on 95 BFM.
With Alex this morning. Such a treat. We're going to